The format I want to use today is that of a lecture where I show you something and I'm not expecting you to follow along. Rather, I want you to think with me and correct my mistakes and try to follow on. And whatever I produce, the code, will be available to you in the GitHub repository after the lecture. Please remind me if I forget about that. What I want to discuss today is more advanced features of the Julia language, maybe going even a bit further than what you'll actually use in the course later on. But it's always good to know what is available, even if yourself are not actually using it. Last time on Friday, I showed you how to create a Julia module, and we wrote a simple example module. I'm just going to open it here. And we defined a structure point and the mutable point and experimented with that. I'm sorry, the color is all gone because I was not prepared. So it's all black and white on the left now. We had a point and we had a mutable point. And today, why I want to show a bit more how you would write a Julia module and what you can do there. And I'm going to loosely base it on the documentation. So, let's add something to the bottom. I'm just going to leave the things here that we did last time. I don't want to delete anything. I want to define a polynomial. I want to represent a polynomial in Julia and perform certain operations on it. And I want to show how you would design that in actual Julia code. Great. Just trying to draw a divider here. I thought I could draw 80 of these quickly, but it's going to take a bit. So to represent a polynomial, usually you would just store the coefficients of the polynomial. That's a finite number of coefficients. They're all real numbers, or maybe integers or rationals. And the usual representation, of course, is that of an array or a vector of numbers. And the convenient, if you do that in a particular project, then you might have lots of different numbers, different arrays around. In Mathematica, everything is a list. In MATLAB, everything is an array, and it might be easy to get confused what is actually stored in that array. You might not remember anymore, or the person who reads the code, whether it's a polynomial or a polynomial with odd coefficients, where the numbers need to be interpreted differently. And in Julia, it's rather easy, and it is very cheap to introduce a new type for that. So let's introduce a type, struct polynomial. There's an R missing, thank you. And as last time, we do not want to choose what kind of type the coefficients have. We allow any type. We just say a type t. And in the end, of course, it needs to be some kind of numeric type. And then we have the coefficients. Let's call it coefs. I am not there. And this is going to be a vector of type t. A vector is a one-dimensional array of type t. And I'm going to split the screen. The top of the screen has the code that we are writing, and the bottom of the screen has the test cases. I'm going to remove this here. And then we can do, for example, create a polynomial. Polynomial of certain coefficients, for example, 1, 2, 3. Let's just run that. The command for that was test. Takes a bit of time. Polynomial undefined. I forgot to export the identifier polynomial. Let's do that and run it again. And this is a polynomial with integer coefficients, and the coefficients are just 1, 2, and 3. That is rather boring. Let's now add a function to evaluate a polynomial at a particular point. So we define a function. And the function evaluate takes the polynomial and the position where we want to evaluate it. Nomial and x. And then we evaluate the polynomial. How do we do this? To evaluate it, it's the, well, let me write the expression. It is the sum of the coefficient times x to the power I for I comma c in enumerate e dot the coefficients. And this is a bit of a mouthful here. So let's see what we do here. I'm going to dissect it on the command line to show what is done. If you have a list of coefficients, 1, 2, 3, that is just this. And you can iterate over the coefficients. You can, for example, 2c plus 1 for c in, sorry, let's assign 1 to 3 to a variable called cs as coefficients, plurals of c. And then you can write 2c plus 1 for c in cs. That loops over all the coefficients cs, in turn assigns each of these to c and evaluates this expression 2c plus 1, which gives 3, 5, and 7. Internally, what Julia does with any kind of collection, arrays, and many other data types are collections. You can iterate over them. An iterator allows you to access each element in turn. And there are also, you can modify an iterator. For example, you can say enumerate. Well, sorry, getting ahead of myself here. This, of course, does nothing special. Enumerate is a function defined in the base library of Julia that allows, that modifies the iterator. Instead of returning just the coefficients, it adds a running number to it, a running index. Okay, now you don't see anything. Sorry, I should call this something different, right? Let's call this A, B, C, and D, E, F. And now you see what happens. C is now a tuple, a pair of numbers. It's the running index, 1, 2, 3, and the actual coefficient. I'm going to use that here because it is convenient. So what enumerate returns is a tuple. So we decompose the tuple into an integer I and the original coefficient, and then calculate the coefficient times x to the I to evaluate the polynomial. There's a small error in this code. Do you see what that error might be? The problem is that coefficients are numbered starting from 1, whereas if you evaluate a polynomial, the first coefficient should probably see to the 0. So I'm going to change that to I minus 1. And let's now give an example where we evaluate that polynomial at a particular position, say at 2. Let's see what happens. Right, of course, I'm not in my best form today. Is 17, is that correct? That's 1 plus 2 times 2 is 4, plus 3 times 4. Yeah, it's probably correct. Of course, there are so many ways of getting this wrong. So what I introduced here is this function enumerate that allows you to modify iterators. I'm calculating a sum in this elegant way, and the expression inside over which sum acts is an iterator, and c times x to the I minus 1 is the particular expression that is summed. We maybe also want to be able to add two polynomials. Sorry, I should ask, are there questions regarding how to evaluate the polynomial? Of course, if you're new to Julia, then knowing that functions such as sum exist, that enumerate exists, and a particular for syntax might be alien to you. But apart from that, nobody is complaining that that's either okay or it's a really bad sign. I hope you speak up if it doesn't work. Next, define a function that allows you to add two polynomials. So for that, we we add a method to the add operator that's defined by Julia already. Let's two polynomials, call them P and Q. Do you want to make a suggestion for how we could implement adding two polynomials? Okay. The way I want to implement that is that we first look at the number of coefficients in each of these polynomials, and then we take the maximum of these, and this is the number of coefficients that exist in the common polynomial. So we have the length L is the maximum of length of P coefs and the length of Q coefs. Then we're going to allocate a new set of coefficients. Let's say resulting coefficients. And create a vector of all zeros. The function for that in Julia is zeros of length L. And then I'm going to use two loops. In each loop, the coefficients are going to modify it. I'm going to add the coefficients of each of the polynomials to it. For I, does this make sense? So in the first loop here, we loop over all the coefficients and the resulting coefficients at position I are modified. We add to it the coefficient of polynomial P, the ith coefficient here. And this might not modify all R coefficients. If the first polynomial just has two coefficients and the second one has five, then this will modify just the first two coefficients by adding the respective coefficients. And similarly down here for the second array for Q, and this will lead to the respective result. Let's add a test case to see what happens. Yes, it worked. Oh, very good, very good. Okay, there's one thing that's a bit unclean, and that is that this function zeros here automatically chooses that the array should be of type floating point, and it should rather choose the particular type. If you add two integers, the result should be integer. I'm going to ignore that here for the moment. Yes?
Is there some other editor we can use besides Vmax?
You can use any editor you want, yes. Okay, so is that your private laptop or what are you using here? Oh.
Nothing, mate. I've got a command line only. I have Julia is on here. I got all the dependencies because I found the install instruction. Julia is fine. What I can't do is the
editor. Okay.
Max on Linux as well, and it works, so we can look together.
Can you show me how to do this?
Okay. Well, since today in this lecture, I want to show you something on the screen, and I'm not actually asking you to code along, but rather to pay attention and to correct my mistakes. We can discuss and solve the problem after the lecture. And because otherwise, might be inconvenient for the others who have to wait until we install Emacs for other lectures. This is adding to polynomials. Another thing we might want to do is to scale a polynomial by a particular number.
Is it possible for you to make it slightly bigger?
Yes, yes, of course. Is that better?
Yeah.
Even larger?
I think so.
Okay. I'm running out of screen space here, but... yeah, usually I would say you should come closer to the front, but the whole room is full, so you're safe here. So let's overload the multiplication operator. Let's take some value a with which we want to multiply the polynomial. And modify the polynomial. An elegant way to do that is to use the map function. Are you familiar with map? So there's a function map, and map applies a particular function to each element of a collection. So as usual, let's just an example collection. For example, the numbers 1, 2, 3 in the list. Let's make it more complicated, right? 1, 2, 4. And then with map, we can apply a particular function to it. Let's then define a function fx equals 2x plus 1. And then if you write map f, 1, 2, 4, the result is, as you expect, 3, 5, 9. And Julia also has a notion of what is called lambdas, or anonymous functions. What I did up here is define a function, but I also gave it a name. The name is f. You can also define functions without giving the function a name. The syntax for that is like this, with an arrow x goes to 2x plus 1. This is also a function. The result is a generic function with one method. And I could, for example, say g equals this. Then g is also a function in some way. And I can write g of, I don't know, 25 gives 51. And this particular syntax of being able to define a function without giving it a name is very convenient if you use map. So I could say map x goes to 2x plus 1 of 1, 2, 4. And this is also 3, 5, 9. I could also say, for example, a equals 3. And then map x goes to a times x of 1, 2, 4. And the result is 3, 6, 12. This anonymous function here, when it is defined, it looks at the value of a, because a is not defined here, so it takes the value a from the environment and uses this. This is also why it's called a closure. It closes over its arguments. And I'm going to use this feature here to define the multiplication operator. So I create a polynomial. Map x goes to a times x, because to multiply p the coefficients. So what I'm doing here in this lecture is I'm introducing certain important features of the language, important abstractions, important concepts. For example, the idea of iterators, iterator adapters, high-level functions such as map or sum or lambda expressions that you might know from Python or Mathematica. I'm going to use them here in this example so that you have a concrete example how these work. Let's write a test case.
Yes.
Thank you, thank you. Oh, wait, no, I don't. Because it's defined in base, I'm just adding a method to it. It's not a new function, so I don't need to export it. Yeah, these are details of Julia that are not immediately obvious. 3 times polynomial, 1, 2, 4, 42. And running the test case. And then the output 3 times this polynomial is a new polynomial of integers of 3, 6, 12, and 126. Let's define another function that is a bit more complicated, namely taking the derivative of a polynomial. That should also be, straightforward to implement. I'm not saying it's easy. Thank you. And does anybody want to make a suggestion for how to implement that? If you take a derivative of a polynomial, the general idea is that you take one coefficient, and then you kind of, this becomes the previous coefficient, so to say, and you need to multiply it with the respective index position of that coefficient. You had a suggestion, or was it a question?
Basically.
Do you want to suggest what I should type?
We need again this enumeration thing of the coefficients, and then multiply the coefficient with its enumeration index, and then also and then reorder the vector so that every entry gets one index lower.
Okay. So I believe this is what you said. I tried to type it as you said. We enumerate the coefficients. We get I and C. This is then the multiplication. I store the result again in an array. And then we need to chop off one element of the array. And if you have an array, it's for example 2, 4, 6. You can access a particular position. Let's take, for example, the second element. This is 4. But you can also take a range of elements. Let's, for example, the 2th to the, the 2nd to the 3rd element. The result is then an array, 4 and 6. There's a special identifier end that gives you all the elements up to the end. In Python, I believe that would be -1 that you write here. And this expression here, as you see, it chops off the first element. We start with 2, 4, 6, 8, and then we reduce the first one. I'm sure there's a more elegant way to do that, but this is good enough here. This then chops off the first element, and then we create a polynomial for that. And let's test that. The derivative of a polynomial, let's pick an easy polynomial, right? 1, 1, 1. Let's see what happens here. Okay, I have a syntax error. Oh, I forgot a parenthesis here. And the derivative of 1 plus x plus x squared, this is what this corresponds to, is 2 plus 3x. That's not quite right. We got something wrong here.
Multiply by I minus 1.
Pardon?
Multiply by I minus 1.
Could be. Let's try that. That looks good, does it not? Let's make it a bit longer. Let's also take the derivative of this one. This is just x squared as polynomial, and the result should be just 2x. Yes, that seems to work. Okay, there's another question I want to ask you about the format of this lecture. What I'm doing here is rather interactively. I am talking and I'm typing, but there's no text I write on the blackboards and no slides I'm showing to you. And what I'm doing is I'm typing as I'm speaking to slow me down, but it might still be too fast. So my question is this format working for you? Or should I switch to a different format in the end? maybe prepare slides or write something on a blackboard, or maybe I should generally type more slowly. Are you bored? Should I type more quickly? Nobody's complaining. I should set up another poll and then ask you whether this works for you or not, or whether you have other ideas. But as usual, feel free to open an issue on GitHub to tell me if something's not working for you. You can create a new GitHub account and then kind of stay anonymous. I don't know what you can do. Okay, so this is the code we just wrote. This is a general definition of polynomials of arbitrary types, and we defined a few functions for that. There's a function to evaluate a polynomial. We wrote functions to add and to multiply polynomials and to take a derivative of a polynomial. We can maybe make it a bit nicer. This multiplication operator that we currently defined says we can left multiply a polynomial with a constant. It doesn't allow us to right multiply something. We can also allow right multiplication, and of course we just fall back to left multiplication for that. And you would write it like this. This is rather simple to implement. Similarly, we could define functions to create a zero polynomial, to subtract polynomials, etc. I'm not going to go into more detail here. What I want to point out is that the structure we defined above here, the struct polynomial, has no runtime overhead. This code is as fast as if we had manipulated the coefficient vectors directly. Although we wrapped it in a type, and then basically every routine here, we have to access the coefficients list from the polynomial objects that we created, and then create new polynomials from the result lists that we have created. These operations are not present at runtime anymore, because the compiler will optimize them away. And that is an important feature of a language, and that is called the overhead of an abstraction. It's called a zero-cost abstraction. And that means that you can, when you program in your code, create new types left and right, and it does not matter because the code does not get slower. So when you create a type, the question that you should ask yourself whether it makes the code cleaner, whether it makes the code easier to understand, or whether it makes the code shorter to write. And you do not need to worry about runtime overhead. I mean, for a simple function like that, you're probably not worried about the runtime and overhead as well. But there is actually no cost to that. You can compare the code that we wrote here to something you would have written in Mathematica. And in Mathematica, you probably just would have used curly braces to store the list of coefficients and do something with that. And then, of course, Mathematica code uses these curly braces and lists everywhere. And it's then easy to get confused what these lists mean. I mentioned that earlier. And by introducing types like that, you reduce the source of confusion. And if you later have a more complicated code where you may have two different things, maybe polynomials with even or with odd coefficients, then you reduce this source of confusion and this source of errors. So that is important if you program in the large. If you're a beginner in Julia, then probably you tend to write code that is just straight. You think of the algorithm and you translate the code into a sequence of instructions. And then at some point, this list of instructions, the code that you write, will become longer and longer, 10 lines, 20 lines, 100 lines. And at that point, it makes sense to look at the code and try to extract something to simplify it. Maybe some of the operations are repeated and you can define a function. Maybe certain pieces of data, certain variables always appear together, and then it makes sense to define a type for that. And when you do that, then the code becomes easier to understand and becomes cleaner, and in the end also shorter and more likely to be correct. If you're taking the course for credit, I expect you to write an open source project for Julia and then also give a short presentation on that project. And if you're not taking the course for credit, but if you're maybe new to Julia, then I still recommend that you do the same thing. On Friday, I'm going to introduce how to use GitHub and Travis and other features to make sure the code doesn't actually vanish, that you keep track of the versions, that you can roll back if you made a change, that when you write a paper, you can still go back what you did 2 months or 3 months ago. And of course, I expect you to use that in the project that you're writing. And I believe on Friday at the end of the session or on next Wednesday, I'm going to give a detailed outline of what I expect in that project to be. And then if you're, even if you're just auditing the course, you can still think about creating such a project because that will be a good exercise. And of course, going forward in the other module, I also expect you to create projects for such a course. Do you have other questions about the polynomial class or the particular polynomial type, sorry, or about the particular abstractions that are introduced? So there was this enumerate, this function that converts an iterator into another iterator. There are other such functions in the base library that you find in the documentation. We created arrays. There is map that are introduced that allows you to transform an array. There's an anonymous function and a function that combines all these features. Do you have questions regarding this? Okay, if not, then I want to introduce something else in Julia that is, goes more in the direction of computer science or more in the direction of Mathematica. The major difference between a language such as Mathematica and C and Fortran is that Mathematica allows you to do symbolic evaluation of something. You can derivative, take a derivative of a function, and a derivative of 2x plus 1. Mathematica would say the result is 2, well, if you take the derivative with respect to x. And the thing is that Julia and Mathematica are actually internally based on very similar infrastructure. It's the same idea that you have in Lisp. And that idea is that if you write down an expression, that the language can talk about the expression. So if you write 2 plus 3 as an example, then of course the answer is 5. But you can also take the expression 2 plus 3 and talk about it as an expression. And the way to do that would be to quote it. Let's do something simple. For example, x is a variable. It's undefined. Let's say x equals 2. And if you quote it with a colon in front of it, then the result is just that. And we can ask for the type of this strange thing, and the type is symbol. So in Mathematica, if you just type x without defining x in any way, then x just stands for itself, or in Mathematica's language, x is a symbol. If you assign a value to it in Mathematica, x equals 2, then the value of x would be the number 2. And Julia has the same feature here in this case, but it doesn't do the distinction between symbols and values automatically. But if you want to have a symbol, you need to prefix it with a colon, and then you get a symbol. You can also quote an expression, for example, 2 plus 3. You also need to quote it. I'm going to add a parenthesis around it. And the result is just the expression 2 plus 3. It has not been evaluated. You can ask for the type of this expression. It's actually expl. Expl is a type. And every expression consists of two pieces. There is a head, and there are arguments. So this means that this expression, 2 plus 3, is internally represented as a function call. And the function call has three arguments, namely the operator plus, 2, and 3. And in Mathematica, this would be, are you familiar with the tree form in Mathematica? If you write an expression, you can write tree form. This is a similar thing. I'm not going to write it on the blackboard. I don't think that makes sense. And what you can do with expressions, you can manipulate them. You can create your own expressions if you want. For example, you can say call, comma, plus 1, 2. What is this? I hope this works. And you can evaluate expressions. Sorry, wrong constructor. And if you evaluate an expression, then you get an actual value. And Julia has a macro system. The term macro in Julia means something very different than C or C++ that allows you to manipulate expressions. So if you were to write a function where you want to calculate a derivative of an expression, that is actually possible in Julia as well. Of course, of much of the convenience that Mathematica adds around that is not actually available in Julia. And that if you add two numbers, 2 + 3, that is an expression, it's not surprising, but actually in Julia, everything is an expression. If you have an if statement, that is an expression. If you have a for loop, that's an expression. A variable assignment is internally an expression. A function definition is an expression. A module is an expression, and so on. Everything is an expression. That is called homoiconicity. Sorry. And that is an important concept. If it allows a language that allows you to write a program and manipulate programs in that language, that allows you to write programs that manipulate itself. For example, you could write, I just said that, a function that takes as input an expression, takes the derivative of that expression, and then evaluates that expression. And implementing this in other languages, in Python and C, would be much more complicated. In Python, you'd have to use the SymPy package. In Julia, this is built in. To get a bit more experience with that, I want to write a small function that takes as input an expression and calculates then the derivative of that expression. And that will also explain Julia syntax a bit better. Let's create a new module for that. So then we generate a new module. Deriv, that's called deriv2018. Go into that directory. It's activated. And let's look at the source code that has generated. And let's write a function that takes a derivative of an expression. A derivative, and not of any expression, just particular simple expression. For example, the derivative of a sum is the sum of the derivatives of the individual expressions. The derivative of a number is 0. And the derivative of a symbol, well, that depends. The derivative of x with respect to x is 1. And the derivative of anything else with respect to x is 0. So let's begin to write this. Let's call the derivative. Let's define a function. The derivative of any number with respect to a certain variable that is passed in as a symbol is 0. I'm creating the test and run tests. Watch. Using, right? Yes. The derivative of the number 3 with respect to the symbol x. Deriv not defined. Derivative, okay. The derivative of the number 3 with respect to x is 0. Let's define the derivative of a symbol. And the derivative of a particular symbol, for example, x, y, z, with respect to a variable, for example, x, that depends whether the symbol is equal to the variable with respect to which we want to take the derivative. So this is this. It's 1 if they're equal, and it's 0 otherwise. So we calculate the derivative of x with respect to x. Oops, man, sorry about the jumping around. And the derivative of x with respect to y. And the respective derivatives are 1 and 0, as expected. And now let's finally define a function where we take a derivative of an expression, but we respect that expression to be a sum for simplicity. Function. Of an expression, and we only know how to do that if the expression is actually a call, and if the first argument of the call is plus, so that is actually a sum, and expr.args1 is plus, and then the result. The result is that we need to apply the derivative operator to each of the arguments of that sum. So we have x per args 2 to end. We apply the derivative to it, derivative with respect to the variable. And we create a new expression for that. I'll explain the dots here in a minute. We return this argument. And assert false. Can I use error instead? I should use that. Because I'm lazy to implement anything else. This error macro takes a particular error message and outputs an error. So if there's a particular case that you do not have implemented or a particular condition that should not occur, then it's best to abort the code with an error instead of continuing and trying to hide the error, because that then immediately points out where the actual problem is located. There's also a nice syntax in Julia to create arrays. I've been using this syntax quite some bit, 1, 2, 4. This just creates an array. And you can also have arrays in within arrays. So this is an array with two elements. First element is 1. The other element is again an array. But if you use semicolon instead of comma, then the arrays are actually spliced together. So this will give you a single array with 3 elements. And yes. Sorry, I want to explain the concept of splicing at the moment. Let's assume you have a function and you want to pass 2 arguments to a function. Let's define a function that takes 2 arguments, f and x and y equals x plus y. And let's assume we have an array that has 2 elements. For example, x as equals 1 comma 2. And we want to call f with the arguments in x as. Then you can write, of course, x as of 1, x as of 2. And the result is what you expect. But you can also splice the arguments in here. And that is this dot, dot, dot syntax. That means it takes all the elements that the particular iterative object, the particular array has, and uses that as arguments for the function call. So that would then be, again, 3, because the sum of this array elements in this array is just 3. And that is the syntax that I used up here to create the derivative. Now, I shouldn't have written that. This is, of course, is completely wrong. Let's write this from scratch a bit more slowly. I went ahead to myself here. So the sub expressions that we, so let me delete this here actually. We have an expression and we want to calculate the derivative of that expression. Let's get slowly here. The expression is, for example, 2 plus x. This is the expression. The head of the expression is function call, and the arguments of that expression is the function name plus 2 and x. And to calculate the derivative of that expression, we have to calculate the derivative of 2 and the derivative of x. So let's isolate the sub expressions for which we have to take the derivatives. This is the arguments from 2 to end. That would be expressions args 2 to end. It's just 2 and x. Then the result is then map the derivative operator onto these expressions. Sorry.
Last.
Thank you. Thank you. Very good. Yes. This, oh, I didn't define derivative, of course. Apologies. This does not work here. And then let's build another expression. The expression is a function call. We call the add operator. And we have the result expressions here. And let's add a test case, a derivative of 2 plus 3 with respect to x. Nothing. Oh, I forgot the return statement. Apologies. The derivative of 2 plus 3 is 0 plus 0. That is correct. Let's take another example. The derivative of 2 plus x plus a with respect to x is 0 plus 1 plus 0. Now, actually, the details of how the expression is decomposed here and how I reconstruct the expression, that might be alien to you. But I hope you realize that with just a few lines of code, it is possible to implement the derivative operator for sums in Julia. Correspondingly, you could also implement an operator, say, for multiplication or for integration. I mean, not integration in the sense that you find a closed form for an integral, but integration sense of antiderivative. For a particular function here. This derivative operator could, of course, be extended to also handle functions like sine, cosine, arctangent, and so on and so forth. And as you also see, that the reason why I said Julia is not meant for that, you see the expression here, this is 0 plus 1 plus 0. Technically correct, it's not how you would usually write it. Mathematica does automatically simplify expressions. For example, 0 plus anything is anything, and so on. Julia, of course, does not. And actually, simplifying an expression or finding a canonical form for an expression is a very complicated topic. And I don't think there's a Julia package for that. So in principle, this is possible, but it's not something you would want to do in Julia. But there do exist packages for calculating derivatives in Julia. There might even be a Julia user group called Julia Differentiation and so on, because calculating a derivative of something is very important. If you want to optimize something, if you find a minimum or a maximum of a goal function, the usual way to do that would be to find a zero for the gradient. So the gradient, that is a derivative, and then you call a particular solver that looks for a solution where something is zero. So there are packages where you can input an expression, and the package will then calculate the derivative of the expression. Here we handle symbols, we handle scalars. These packages can also handle arrays as inputs, that is, functions with multiple arguments, because usually that is also the case, something we didn't handle here. And it is quite convenient to have such a thing built into the language. Do you have questions on derivatives, questions on the features that I showed? Yes?
Can you just read out the final expression when it's simplified?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. But I didn't evaluate any of these. Yes. Actually, I can't just do it here on the command line. Evaluate this one here. The result will just be one. And of course, such a simple thing as 0 plus 1, if you actually show it to a compiler, the compiler will actually remove that. So if you write 0 plus 1 plus 0 and then compile the respective function, the result will always be 1. There are no machine instructions that actually do something. Good. I originally intended to also give a bit of an introduction to linear algebra in Julia, because that is an important topic, and Julia is quite good at linear algebra. Because the time is a bit advanced, I'm going to only show that very briefly. I want to basically just show the syntax for doing a matrix vector multiplication, matrix multiplications, and so on. So if you define a vector, let's call it x's, this particular number, say 1, 2, 3, 4. That is a vector. If you write it with a square bracket and with the commas, that is a syntax for a vector, a contravariant vector, a column vector, whatever you want to call it. There's also a syntax for matrices. Actually, let's make that vector smaller, because otherwise it's so tedious to type. If you define a matrix that is a two-dimensional array, then you don't separate the elements by comma, but rather you say 1 and 2, semicolon, 3 and 4. And then you see some elements are separated via spaces. These are the elements that live in the same row. And then you use a semicolon to get a two-dimensional array. And then the matrix vector multiplication uses the regular multiplication. Is that a hope? Oof, yes, that was correct. And that gives you another vector. You can transpose something. There's a transpose operator, which is just the apostrophe as a postfix operator. Instead of the 2x2 arrow 1, 2, 3, 4 that we typed, it's now 1, 3, 2, 4. Can also left multiply. What? Okay, sorry. If you left multiply, you can't use a column vector. You have to use a row vector. So you need to transpose the vector. Yes?
The matrix says, is that semicolon?
That here is a semicolon that you use. And that gives then 7x10. There's also a particular syntax for a dot product. Oof. I'm sorry, I don't recall the syntax. There are people here who know Julia already. What's the syntax for a dot product? Let's just call it dot and hope that it works. No.
Why is it not a star?
Am I thinking too complicated here?
But you need the first x's to be prime.
Yes, okay. It's just the transpose of x times x's. Yeah, I should have known that. I'm sorry. Particularly if you want to actually demonstrate it here. Julia also supports higher dimensional arrays. You can have tensors, three-dimensional and four-dimensional arrays, because the operations become a bit more complicated, because it's not quite clear which indices go with which indices and so on. The nice syntax where you just write A times B, that does not work then anymore. So then you probably have to write explicit loops or explicit comprehension expressions where you loop over the arrays. But the advantage is that because Julia is a compiled language, this does not slow down the code. In Mathematica, if you choose a particular efficient representation for arrays, if you write A times B as a matrix operation, Mathematica runs as fast as any language because it's just a particular call to a library. But if you construct matrices manually in Mathematica or in Python with a table expression or with a for loop, that would be much slower because the iteration in Mathematica and Python is quite a bit slower. In Julia, it is not because it is a compiled language. Oh yes, and matrix multiplication, of course, also uses. I did not define B. Also uses the star syntax. Good. I mentioned that Julia has quite a bit of operations for linear algebra. It's also described in the Julia manual. And if you want to do anything, such as solving a linear system, finding eigenvalues, etc., that is all exists as library functions that you can call. Let's try that. Is it eigs? It must have moved into a package. So, eigenvals? No, it's not. So in Julia 0.6, it was part of the base library. And in Julia 1.0, because the base library had grown quite a bit, they split it up and put it into different packages, different modules that you need to load. I believe you need to load linear algebra before you do that. And I'm apparently not yet sufficiently familiar with Julia 1.0. Very good. Do you have other questions regarding the material that I presented? Yes?
Yeah, question. Why does Julia 1.2 have this new type, linear algebra adjoint, when you actually left multiply a vector with means? I mean, wouldn't you just have a 1 cross 3 vector instead of a 3 cross 1? In one of your examples before, it returns a different type.
This one here?
Yes.
Yes. So there is a bit of a tension here between what is a convenient syntax and what is an elegant representation of what you do. So as a physicist, you just write vector times matrix, and it's kind of implicitly clear that you want to take the vector transpose when you multiply with a matrix. And so also the distinction between a vector and a covector and so on. In some cases, it's important that you make the distinction. In relativity, we do all the time. But other people, engineers and so on, they do not really care about these differences. The metric is trivial all the way. They don't want to care about these differences. So there was a long discussion in Julia for at least 2 years how to handle this the best way. Because you can go really crazy and do it mathematically completely correct, but that would inconvenience people, and they would not like it because they have to type many. They have to call functions that do nothing in the end, because a vector and a covector, it kind of has the same internal representation. So they tried to strike a balance. And the balance that they were able to strike here is that certain things have different types internally. So if you want to look at it, you can look at it. But if you just type the expression, you don't have to care about the types. And if you hadn't mentioned it, then I'm sure half the people wouldn't have noticed that this is then an adjoint instead of something else. You also see that the internal representation here is a one-dimensional array. It's an array int, comma, 1. It's not a two-dimensional array. So the representation of a vector and a covector are both one-dimensional arrays, but they kind of mean different things. So wrapping it in a joint makes sense. MATLAB might have made a different choice. I believe MATLAB, a vector, is a 1D array, and transposed vector is a 2D array that has a size of 1 in the dimension about which you don't care. And this is what the choices that people made. Very good. Then I shall see you on the Friday. Please bring your laptops on Friday. It's going to be more interactive than it was today.